Today being the holy disappearance day of Sripad Madhvacharya, we will speak mostly about him and his teachings, but we will also at least go over the verse for today, which is 10th canto, chapter 15, text number 3. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayet Nashta Praishwa Bhadresho Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Krishne Swadhamo Pagate Dhanamagnana Adipisaha Kalaunashta Drishamesha Puranarko Thunoditaha. Tanman jughoshalim gradrujakulam Mahanmanahat Prakhyapayah Sarasvata Vatena jushtam shatapatra ganthina Nirikshyarantum Bhagavan Manodate Tat, that forest, Manju, charming, Ghosha, whose sounds, Ali, with bees, Mriga, animals, Dvija, and birds, Akulam, filled, Mahat, of great souls, Manaha, the minds, Prakhya, resembling Payaha, whose water Saraswata, with a lake Vatena, by the wind Jushtam, served Shatapatra, of 100-petaled lotuses Gantina, with the fragrance Nirikshya, observing Rantam, to take pleasure, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Manaha, his mind, Dathe, turned. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Jai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead looked over that forest, which resounded with the charming sounds of bees, animals, and birds, and which was enhanced by a lake whose clear water resembled the minds of great souls, and by a breeze carrying the fragrance of 100-petaled lotuses. Seeing all this, Lord Krishna decided to enjoy the auspicious atmosphere. Please repeat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead looked over that forest, which resounded with the charming sounds of bees, animals, and birds, and which was enhanced by a lake whose clear water resembled the minds of great souls, and by a breeze carrying the fragrance of hundred-petaled lotuses.
Seeing all this,
Lord Krishna decided to enjoy the auspicious atmosphere. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Krishna, I'm sorry, these are the servants of Srila Prabhupada. We're on the 10th canto, chapter 15. Lord Krishna saw that the Vrindavan forest was giving pleasure to all five senses. The bees, birds, and animals made charming sounds that brought sweet pleasure to the ears. The wind was faithfully rendering service to the Lord by blowing throughout the forest, carrying the cool moisture of a transparent lake, and thus giving pleasure to the sense of touch. By the sweetness of the wind, even the sense of taste was being stimulated, and the fragrance of lotus flowers was bringing pleasure to the nostrils. And the entire forest was endowed with heavenly beauty, which was giving spiritual bliss to the eyes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has thus explained the significance of this verse. Om Ajnana Timarantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yutaparakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Madgavira Pi Gopala Svi Kuryat Kripaya Yadi Tadeva Sampaya Pitwa Hrishye Yustat Priyajanaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead looked over that forest which resounded with the charming sounds of bees, animals, and birds, and which was enhanced by a lake whose clear water resembled the minds of great souls, and by a breeze carrying the fragrance of hundred-petaled lotuses. Seeing all this, Lord Krishna decided to enjoy the auspicious atmosphere. This is the eternal Vrindavan, the spiritual bliss for all of the senses. Even in spiritual life, there is such variety. Sense gratification. The absolute truth is sense gratification. Spiritual sense gratification, real sense gratification. These are fake senses that we are entrapped by right now. They're fake, like everything else in this world. And they rob us of this short window of opportunity called human life, in which we might take advantage of this process of Krishna consciousness, especially here in Vrindavan. So, Krishna is eternally enlivened by his internal energy, Srimati Radharani. And these are all, it's her energy actually. Madhvacharya said, Srishti Stiti Pralaya Sarga Mahavibhute Vritti Prakasha Niyamavrata Bandha Mokshaha Yasya Apanga Lava Matrata Urjita Sa Shrir Yat Kataksha Balavati Adritam Tosmi I bow down to the lotus feet of Lord Ajita, the unconquered Lord Vishnu. Because by a mere sidelong glance of his internal potency, Lakshmi Devi, this is Madhva's mode, this universe is created, it is sustained, and it is destroyed in the end. Srishti Stiti Pralaya Sarga Mahavibhute, all the great wonders that fascinate us within this world are coming from her. Vritti, your occupation, your career, your engagement, it's coming from her. Prakasha, your enlightenment. Niyama, your discipline. Bandha, moksha, bondage and liberation are both coming from her. And a mere sidelong glance from this goddess of fortune affects all this. And this goddess of fortune herself is only an expansion of Srimati Radharani. This is Krishna's real home, his eternal, internal antahapuram, you might say, the confidential sector of the spiritual world, Vrindavan. So everything here is coming from Srimati Radharani, just as everything in the external realm or in Vaikuntha comes from Lakshmi Devi, either through Lakshmi Devi directly or through her expansions, Durga and others. So Krishna is enlivened by this. And the Vrindavan forest, in this pristine state, it gives pleasure to all the five senses. What do we smell wafting through the air in Vrindavan? Well, if you live in MVT, you smell the smoke from the factory behind MVT that burns metal and fills your lungs with things that don't go away. They'll eventually kill you. Or you smell the sewers. That's pretty pungent also. Or you smell the exhaust, belching exhaust from the traffic, and you hear the noise, the rumble of urban life has invaded Vrindavan now. And all these things that should be giving pleasure to the five senses, they're all assaulting our senses now, isn't it? Why is that? Because of atheism. Atheism. We're all atheists, actually, at heart. That's why we've adopted this process. Hopefully, we've realized that we're criminals and need to somehow rectify the mentality that has given rise to this dysfunctional civilization that is falling apart on every continent. Have you noticed? Read the news, but not too much. So Madhvacharya, whose disappearance day is today, he was very, very staunch, very militant even, you can say, about preaching against atheism in all of its forms. Now, what is the chief form of atheism that we have to battle in this world? Basically, Marxism. And Marxism is not just an economic system any longer. Now it's also identity politics, whatever you are, that they attack that and try to exploit on that basis. So all kinds of pungent atheism we have to deal with now. Madhvacharya, in his day, he was actually dealing with, the main thing he was attacking was Shankaracharya's Advaitavad, Kevaladvaita, which basically denies the personality of Godhead. All the wonderful things that we've just heard about Vrindavan, he says it's all Maya. This Shankaracharya, a very offensive. Of course, we know he was instructed to do that. Mayavadamasachastram prachandam bodham uchyate. The Mayavad was designed to resemble Buddhism because people who were infected in those days by Buddhism was all over India. People infected by Buddhist thought, they could only relate with something equally nihilistic or impersonal. So he had a purpose. But anyway, just as Padma Purana and therefore the Vaishnavas who follow the Shastra, just as Padma Purana calls the Mayavadis prachanna baldhas, veiled Buddhists, disguised Buddhists, you might say. So the Mayavadis say that the followers, Madhvacharya and his followers, they're called Prachanna Tarkikas. Tarkika means a logician, because they're very much arguing on the basis of logic. He had to do that. So Madhvacharya appeared in the 13th century, and he founded this Dvaita school of philosophy, Shuddha Dvaita, pure dualism. Actually, it's more like pluralism than dualism. We'll get to that in a moment. But our own Diksha Parampara descends from Madhvacharya through Vyasatirtha and through the others. You can look it up. The list of disciplic succession is given in Bhagavad Gita as it is by Srila Prabhupada. In his childhood, he was known as Vasudeva, but when he was initiated, he was called Purnapragna. And later, he became Anandatirtha. Another title he was given is Bhagavatpada, and finally, Madhvacharya. He appeared near Pajika, in a small place. Even now, it's not really even a village. It's outside of Udupi, on the coast of the Arabian Sea, in the South Kannada district of Karnataka, southwest India. His parents were Tulu-speaking Shivali Brahmanas. They worshipped both Shiva and Vishnu. And in fact, Madhva's appearance had been predicted by an entranced pujari of one of the two Shiva temples there. There are two famous Shiva temples that even in Madhva's day, they were famous holy places, Ananteshwar, Chandramaleshwara. So one devotee who was actually, I'm told, was deaf-mute, but he climbed to the top of the temple and started shouting that this person is going to take birth. What person? Vayu. Vayu is the god of the wind. But he occupies a very special place. In that line, they call him Mukhya Prana, the chief life force of everyone. And he's considered to be via media between God and mankind. In fact, they consider Madhvacharya was a triple incarnation. Vayu, Bhima, and Hanuman. That might explain his militaristic spirit. Or maybe he had Mars in the first house. But anyway, Madhvacharya. He was very staunch and he only worships the Supreme Controller, Brahman, as Vishnu, Rama, Krishna, etc. And he preached that the goal of life is salvation through bhakti. Is that what we believe? The goal of life is to get salvation through bhakti? Is it? No, it isn't. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had this discussion in Madhya Lila chapter 9 of Chaitanya Charitamrita when he visited Udupi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his way was like this. He would inquire submissively from a person. And then when they spoke nonsense, he would completely devastate them philosophically. So he asked the Tattvavada Acharya, what is the goal of life and how to attain it? So the Acharya said, the goal of life is mukti, and you attain this by observing your Varnashram Dharma offered to Lord Krishna. And we don't really have an argument with that to a degree. Most of us need to be liberated before we can practice bhakti. That's stated in chapter 18. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Na Shochati Na Kankshati Samasarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate. You get real bhakti when you're liberated. Until then, what are we practicing? Probate bhakti. Training bhakti. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, no, the goal of sadhya, the goal of life is actually prema, Krishna prema, deep love. The kind of love that we see demonstrated among the gopis, especially in Vrindavan. And how do we attain that? Yes, you should perform your Varnashram Dharma. Even Srila Prabhupada said, I want you to do this in ISKCON. But the idea is that we're really focused. Why are we doing that? We're doing that only to create the stability required in order to hear and chant about Krishna, because that is the way to awaken love of Godhead. So there is a difference in the teachings. You remember, if you've read first chapter of the Adi Lila, that the Diksha Guru and the Shiksha Guru are equally authoritative. but they perform two different functions. So we trace our Diksha lineage from Madhvacharya, but Shiksha is coming mainly from Sridhar Swami and Srimad Bhagavatam. We understand Srimad Bhagavatam through Sridhar Swami and our Acharyas as well. So Madhva was preaching this Dvaitavada, dual, hard dualism. He was not going to compromise. How hard is that dualism? He said, you're not even part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You're actually just a reflection of the Supreme Lord. He didn't want to have any identity whatsoever because he felt it was that important. It's almost like his Dvaita philosophy was custom designed to rout out the Mayavad philosophy. It would be a safe assumption to say that. Just as we look around and we kind of wonder sometimes, it seems as if this COVID-19 virus was custom tailored to wipe out certain segments of the human population. Anyway, so you could not find a better philosophy to completely deny Advaitavad any room whatsoever. He was giving no quarter to Shankaracharya. This is Madhvacharya. He called his philosophy Tattvavada. Tattva means truth. Truthism, as opposed to Mayavada, which means illusionism. So, this was... Shankaracharya identified the self as Brahman and considered this world to be a mere illusion, but Madhva taught complete difference between the self and Brahman, as we've described already, and the world being a separate but dependent reality. The world is real. So very much of Madhvacharya's preaching and writing attacked Shankara's Advaitavad. You might even say that this was Madhva's major focus, just as you could say Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's major focus in his preaching was attacking pseudo-Vaishnavism, which was very prominent in Bengal in the 19th century and early 20th century, particularly the caste Goswamis and the Sahajiyas. He really put a lot of energy into trouncing them, and he made enemies that way. If you're preaching absolute truth in a world meant for those who want to escape it, then you're asking for trouble. Keep it in mind. You cannot have an easy time preaching Krishna consciousness in this world. It's part of the package. Anyway, so somewhere it's even predicted that Madhva said, he correctly predicted that if this Mayavad is not eradicated from the face of the earth, then it's just a matter of time before whole humanity descends into the kind of moral bankruptcy that we see all around us today. He was right. So this is why when we come to Vrindavan, people sometimes, we heard just recently, sometimes people don't want to come to Vrindavan, or when they come to Vrindavan they get a bad taste because they're absorbed on the external platform, and as far as the senses go, it's pretty challenging in some ways. Now, but that is artificial. The actual Vrindavan, if you're leading a normal human life, it remains just as it's been described in the Shastras. We have screwed it up, just like we've screwed up the rest of the world. So much so that they're thinking about how to conquer outer space now, because they've seen that we've already wasted this world. Just like Vladimir Putin, no names mentioned, but it's understood that global warming is a reality now. So he's like developing the northern section of the Russian subcontinent, putting in military bases, laying all the infrastructure for development up there, because that's going to be prime real estate in just a few years, given that the polar ice caps are melting and the world is heating up. It'll be too hot in the south. Just see the demoniac mentality. Or in urban centers like Delhi or Bangalore or Mumbai, New York, Moscow, Paris, everywhere. The urban development leaves this terrible rot in the center of the city such that people eventually move out. And the only ones left in the downtown areas are the the persons who are so tamasic that they have no other option but to live there. This is what atheism does everywhere it touches, and especially communism, a very particularly potent and unfortunately popular brand of atheism now in the modern world. So we have to work against this in the same way that Madhvacharya had to fight the Mayavad. Actually, the two are connected, as we've already mentioned. Okay, so anyway, Vyasatirtha, whom we've already mentioned, one of Madhva's major disciples, he wrote a verse that summarizes Madhva's teachings. Sriman Madhva Mate Hari Paratara Satyam Jagat Tattvato Bhedo Jivagana Hare Ranuchara Nichocha Bhavam Gataha Muktir Naija Sukhanu Bhutir Amala Bhaktish Tat Satanam Yakshadi Tritayam Pramanam Akhinam Nayika Vedyo Harihi. That means, in Madhvacharya's teaching, nine things. Hari is supreme. The universe is real. The groups of jivas, all of us, we're all subordinate to Hari. Like Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Ekala Ishwara Krishna Arsha Bhritya. And there are gradations among the jivas. We'll get to that in a moment. Liberation constitutes the jiva's own bliss. Nija Sukhanubhuti. That's also in Bhagavatam. And the three means of knowledge are perception, deduction, and authoritative assertion. Pratyaksha Namana Shabda, just like we say. And the only thing to be known in all the Vedas is Lord Krishna. This is his philosophy in a nutshell. Baladeva Vidyabhushan gives this exact same verse in his conclusion of Prameya Ratnavali. Prameya Ratnavali means nine gems. Well, he gives his own verse in the end. He says, there are nine jewels of Prameya, or conclusive truth, arranged by Madhvacharya in this book. Let the keenly intelligent persons respectfully keep this Prameya Ratnavali upon their hearts. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he tweaks this verse a little bit. He gives his own verse, but it's a very similar verse. He says, Amnaya prahatatvam harimiha paramam sarvashaktim rasabdhim tad bhinam shamsh chajivan prakritikavalitan tad vimuktam shabhavat bheda bheda prakasham sakalamapi harehe sadhanam shuddha bhaktim sadhyam yat priti vevetyupatishyati gharau gaurachandram bhajetam. That means, I worship Sri Gaurachandra, Lord Chaitanya, who has revealed the path of wisdom. The Vedic scriptures are the only authority for knowledge in ninefold aspects, which are, one, Lord Hari is the only source of wisdom. Two, he is omnipotent. Three, he is an ocean of bliss. Four, the living entities are his parts and parcels. Five, some of the living entities are conditioned by material nature. Six, other living entities are liberated from material nature. Everything, seven, everything, including the jivas, is one and different from Sri Hari. Eight, unalloyed devotional service is the only means for the conditioned souls to go beyond the world of birth and death. Nine, love for the Supreme Lord, prema, is the only goal. So it's a little different. Madhva teaches pure dualism. We teach simultaneous dualism and monism. How is that possible? It's not actually conceivable. But it seems to be what Sridhar Swami is teaching as well throughout the Bhagavatam. So he was kind of like another Mayavadi. He was disguised as a Mayavadi, but actually was a devotee. All right, so Madhva's Pramana Lakshana, one of his 37 works that he wrote, deals with his pramanas, and as we mentioned, they're the three that we also accept. Shabda, Anumana, Pratyaksha. I think you all know what that means. He didn't encourage mindless repetition of dogma. He didn't like that. And he didn't like accepting any philosophical teachings too easily. And he didn't like dullness either. He liked a person to be sharp and think and to take philosophy head on, to take the bull by the horns, so to speak. We often avoid philosophy on days like this. We like to hear pastimes. And that's great. But philosophy is very important. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, because it sharpens your mind. Why do you need to have a sharp mind? We'll get to that in a moment. It's often been said that Madhvacharya spent more time devastating other people's philosophies than he did to really explaining his own. And that seems to be true from my experience. In his commentaries and in his independent works both, he has a very terse style that's hard to follow. So just as the six Goswamis really delineated the teachings of Lord Chaitanya in a comprehensible manner, so Madhva's followers, especially Jayatirtha, did the same. And I noticed there's a book called Pramana Paddhati written by Jayatirtha that he actually spends, he talks about these three aspects, Anuman, Shabda, and Pratyaksha. But you would think he would talk mostly about Shabda because that's what we favor, isn't it? But he doesn't. He talks about logic, nyaya. Why so much emphasis on nyaya? One scholar put this nicely: in order to correctly understand the tenets of any worthwhile doctrine, it's essential that one be exposed to conflicting views and be convinced of the truth of the doctrine in question. Therefore, Madhvacharya's school has always held that one needs to understand all relevant opposing philosophies and must reject them only after careful analysis and consideration. This is important. You need to have a sharp mind. You need to study philosophy. You need to know Krishna consciousness. Without knowledge, there's no more Hari Hari Bol, Srila Prabhupada said. At some point, it will get to that. Why? Even if you're not interested in philosophy, someone else's philosophy is interested in you. And you have to do something about it, because you'll be presented with false ideas. Even in the name of Krishna consciousness, sometimes we see people bring up so many, you wonder, where does it come from? And you cannot discriminate properly what to accept and what to reject unless you're actually reading Prabhupada's books. This is the real point. So Madhvacharya, he has several philosophical things that we don't really have time to dilate on, and maybe no need as well just now, but one thing I can say is that he has a system of called Pancha Bheda, five differences. There's a difference between the jivas and God. That's clear. There's a difference between matter and God. That should also be clear, because Shankara doesn't believe either one of those. There's a difference between two jivas also. Jivas they're also different from each other. There's a difference between the jiva and matter, as Prabhupada tells us all the time. Life comes from life. And there's a difference between one material thing and another material thing. This he calls Panchabheda. And it's important. Why? Because it has striking ramifications. On account of this philosophy, he actually says that, well, they consider in that line the deity to be a symbol. When you're not worshipping the deity is not considered to be God. Only when you're doing puja is the deity God. They say like this. Why? Because there's an eternal distinction between matter and spirit. I don't know the details how they work that out, but this is their philosophy. Even in this world, if you mistake brass for gold or glass for diamonds, you're going to have a problem. Either you spend a lot of money for glass or you sell diamonds for a few dollars. That's a problem. So you have to recognize differences in this way. And Madhva insisted on this. So he has this system he calls taratamya that we mentioned. The jivas are different from one another. What is that? It's not just different. There's a hierarchy. That's uncomfortable in a Marxist society like ours. But there is a hierarchy. Some people are better than other people, both spiritually and materially. Spiritually, this is described in Rupa Goswami's Laghu Bhagavatamritam. Materially, Srila Prabhupada says this all the time. For example, he says, men and women are not equal. That's a controversial one, because we're all Marxists again. But this is called taratamya, hierarchy. A demigod is better than a human being. A human being is better than an ant. An ant is better than a microbe. This is reality. So this is called Tāratamya. And it's reflected by Baladevidya Bhushan in his Premaya Ratnavali as well. Jiva gana harer anuchara nichocha bhavam gataha. Nicha uccha bhavam. You're existing in a low state, you're existing in a high state, but that's reality. He teaches this also. So, in fact, Madhva, some of his controversial teachings, he even says that some souls are by nature sattvic eternally. Some of them are rajasic eternally. Some of them are tamasic eternally. That's tough to deal with. It's like eternal damnation. And how does he do this? He does it by interpreting the word sattva in chapter 17, text 3. Sattvanurupa sarvasya shraddha bhavati. Sattva means a lot of things. It doesn't just mean goodness. Sattva means existence also. So in that verse, Madhva takes sattva to be existence. You have your faith according to your existence, and your very existence is one of three modes. Our acharyas don't say this. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladevidya Bhushan both say that sattva in that verse refers to the antahakarana. Antahakarana, we call it the subtle body. Mind, intellect, ego, and memory. Collectively, these four are called the antahakarana. So some people's subtle body is sattvic, some people have a rajasic one, some people have a tamasic one. That's what impels us to take birth in whatever species we were born in. And as long as we keep thinking and acting in the same way, we're going to keep taking birth in that way as well. So this philosophy has very practical ramifications that we need to consider. All right, so this kind of teaching, eternal damnation and eternal gradation and, you know, hard dualism, this in the last century led some scholars to speculate, that Madhvacharya must have been influenced by what? Christianity. Trust a Western scholar. They'll always say something like this. Now, Madhva also, in his system, Madhva himself is considered to be Mukhya Pran, we've already mentioned. He is the intermediary between God and man. Sounds a lot like Jesus Christ, doesn't it? Anyway, that theory has lost favor among scholars in general nowadays, so we don't need to dilate on it, but it's important to note. We mentioned already, Madhva wrote 37 books, and some of them are quite large, like commentaries on Mahabharata. You know how big Mahabharata is? We think a Bhagavad Gita commentary is something special, but that's just one chapter. And he also did Bhagavatam as well. Bhagavatam Tatparya Nirnaya. And he also wrote some 20 independent works. He wrote commentaries on the Rig Veda and other Vedas, on the Upanishads, Brahma Sutras. He wrote several commentaries. Most of the Upanishads, in chief Upanishads, he wrote about. And he wrote his own things as well. We mentioned Pramana Lakshana. That's his treatise on epistemology, evidence, proof. How do you know what you know? And other things as well. Now, we don't have time to really talk about too many of them. But he wrote stotras and poems as well, some songs, and he wrote miscellaneous works about rituals as well. He himself established the rituals in the Udupi temple, where his deity of Krishna is still worshipped today. Srila Prabhupada often quotes Madhvacharya throughout Bhagavatam. In fact, he even quotes Vijayadwaj Tirtha, which is Madhva's commentator. Prabhupada also quotes him throughout the Bhagavatam. In most of his works, Madhvacharya writes with extreme brevity, real pithy. Mentioned already, it's almost hard to understand him. Mittam chasaram chavacho hi vagmita. The principle is that the essential truth spoken concisely is real eloquence. So Madhva seems to have honored that principle in his writings, but it's made his things a little bit hard to understand. We don't have any time left to really dilate on anything more than that, but I will just share with you something that you're probably not likely to hear outside of Madhva circles in South India, Karnataka particularly. Madhvacharya wrote one Dwadish, not one, but 12 Dwadasha Stotras, 12 Stotras. This is connected with the appearance of his deity of Lord Krishna. Madhva wasn't just a militant, heavy, fanatical, preaching type opponent of Advaita and other views, Gnostic views, like Jains. Actually, Klaus Klostermeyer, a friend of ISKCON who met Srila Prabhupada, respected Indological scholar, he writes in his survey of Hinduism that Madhvacharya conspired with a local king in South India to impale thousands of Jains just to get rid of that ideology. He was hoping like this. And no comment. But Madhva had this other side that we don't see very often, but we do see it in the Dwadasha Stotras. He had a premonition. After having written his commentary on Bhagavad Gita and receiving the approval of Vyas for that commentary, and returning to South India and preaching widely and getting a lot of followers, he thought, we have to have a deity that everyone can worship here. And one day he got this premonition that this deity is going to appear to me. So he went to the nearby beach at Malpe. Now they've turned it into an amusement park because of atheism, again, because of Mayavad, because of Marxism, because of all the above nonsense views. But he sat there in meditation and he composed five stotras, thinking that the Lord is going to appear to me today. I'm not moving until he does. So then he was in the middle of composing the sixth of those stotras, which I will share with you now. Priniyamo Vasudeva Devata Mandalakhanda Mandanam. Very famous stotra in Sanskrit. What does it mean? We in dearly delight Vasudev, the flawless jewel of the multitude of gods. We endearingly delight him. He is adored by an endless multitude of eminent beings. His strong, wide shoulders are anointed with sandal paste. The sidelong glances of Indira, Lakshmi, worship him as if in offering arati. And his serpent-like arms are effective in lifting the Mandara hill. His sportive pastimes include the cosmic creation and annihilation. He possesses an eternally effulgent, blissful form that is fully qualified with the six opulences. He is engaged in the work of thoroughly removing the wicked, and he is the complete shelter of everyone else, whom he enlivens and makes prosperous. He is the fulfiller of the prayers of unlimited number of advanced devotees. His divine feet confer transcendental bliss upon the submissive. He inspires living beings in their respective engagements, in various dispositions and occupations, as per their different karmas. Among the learned, he is deliberated upon with such speculations as, not this, not that, in 1880. This is the Upanishads. He is worshipped by the sounds of the Vedas coming from the mouths of the most highly qualified brahmanas engaged in debate, as well as by the worthy valor of the best of kings. He is pristine. He is qualified with inconceivably vast, indisputable wisdom. His blissful form is composed of dazzling spiritual light. He is ageless and supreme. We endearingly delight that Vasudeva, to whom no one anywhere has ever posed a threat of any sort, in whose qualifications the most elevated have resolute conviction. Do we? Think about it. What distinguishes an advanced devotee from a neophyte? Faith only. How's your faith? What mode is it in? Study chapter 17. He is the most excellent one. Any wish he has is an instantly manifest fact. He is the omnipotent authority. Vedic assertions are always repeated by those who are fully intelligent. Vedic assertions like this. He is the uprooter of the incessant flow of sorrows for those who take his darshan. He is worshipped by Lord Brahma and Shiva, who pray, May we see him. May we see him. He's far away from those who are always ruining themselves, even though he is the self within all. By his own will, he may become under the control of the virtuous devotees. We endearingly delight, flawless Vasudev, flawless jewel among the multitude of gods, we endearingly delight him. He who created Brahma, the firstborn, whose form merely consists of his qualities in toto, Satchidananda. His eldest son's foremost son is Ugra, Shiva, who is actually the origin and who is always accepted as supreme deity by his devotees. We endearingly delight the infallible Vasudeva, who is verily always replete with all qualities and devoid of any trace of flaws. Everything that is impossible for others to accomplish is enabled by him, who perpetually affects everything done by all created beings. Whatever he does is anything impossible, he's able to do it. And anything that anyone else does is actually done by him. That's what he's saying. This is his qualification. We endearingly delight that Vasudeva, whose remembrance with devotion destroys all the previous sins of the fully purified souls, who awards to Brahma and other superiors their godly positions, and for whose pleasure the virtuous perform their prescribed duty. We endearingly delight that Vasudevan, whose transcendence the prescribed duty duly offered is of imperishable value, from whose name miseries vanish, whose undecaying, ageless, and in all circumstances immortal, and from whose abdomen the universe beginning with Brahma emanates. Joyfully, our attention is always upon the blissful Lord, given the exalted appellation Nandi Tirtha. We endearingly delight Vasudeva, the flawless jewel among the multitude of gods, by whom all the assembled gods beginning from Shesha are satisfied, and who has bestowed spiritual elevation by his sidelong glance and gentle reddish smile. We endearingly delight Vasudeva, the flawless jewel among the multitude of gods. We endearingly delight Vasudeva. This is just one of his stotras. According to commentaries in that tradition and Madhva's authorized biography written by, I think it was his nephew, Sumadhva Vijaya, when Madhva recited this stotram, this one we just read, at that point he noticed there was a boat on the water that was having some problem. It was stuck on a sandbar, and they couldn't get it off the sandbar. So the captain and some sailors came, and they prayed to the saint, Swamiji, as they always do, give us your blessings, that we need to move our boat. So Madhva, in his capacity as Vayu, took off his chadar, and he just waved it. And that boat was blown off the sandbar. And the astonished captain and his crew, they all came and surrendered to Madhvacharya. They said, you know, our boat is, we're coming from Dwarka, and we're headed to the south to sell all these riches. You can have anything you want. And Madhvacharya said, hey, we're yatis. We don't need anything. But we use chandan a lot, if you have any gopi chandan. So he had a big block of gopi chandan that he was using in the boat just for ballast. Not even that he was going to sell it. He was just using it because it was heavy. So he said, you can take this. Madhvacharya took this. And they were walking back. And as they got some distance away from the shore, a place called Varabandeshwara, you can still go there today. There's a famous Balaram temple. He put down this block of chandan, and it split open. And there was Krishna standing inside. Udupi Shri Krishna ki jai, Madhvacharya ki jai. Beautiful form of child Krishna, Krishna in his Balgopal form, holding onto his mother's churning rod and ropes, like Damodar Leela, this Krishna pastime. So Madhvacharya was astonished. He said, I knew this would happen. And at that point, he sang, they took the deity back to Udupi, and they washed him in the tank behind the temple. Those of you who have been to Udupi, you know, Madhva Sarovar. So Madhvacharya himself personally bathed the deities for many hours and spontaneously composed the remainder of his 12 stotras, stotras 7 through 12. Devaki Nandana Nanda Kumara, ityadi. Very nice, melodic, beautiful praise of mainly Krishna's names. So, in this way, Madhvacharya established his deity of Krishna in his Sri Krishna Mutt, it's called now. And he's been worshipped there ever since for, what, nearly 1,000 years. This was in 11th century, 12th century, 13th century. It's not very clear. Scholars debate exactly when Madhva was there, but hundreds of years, and that tradition is still going on. So in this way, Madhvacharya continued preaching. He went again to the north to see Vyasadeva, and he would again receive more blessings. He gathered more disciples. His philosophy became very powerful, and he did, in fact, put a severe dent in the Mayavad philosophy of Shankaracharya, for which they have to resort to dastardly tricks in order to defend themselves. For example, once they stole his library, thinking that this is going to finish the Dvaitavad, we don't want to have to worry about him anymore. Or Appaya Dikshita and other Advaitins, they, around the 16th century, they started attacking Madhvacharya as well because they couldn't deal with his philosophy. It was so perfect. So the backstory of the Udupi Krishna deity is that this deity was actually worshipped many years before. The deity was given to Dwarkadish, Krishna, by... No, this is a different story, sorry. This deity, the queens of Dwarka, they all wanted to know about Krishna's childhood pastimes in Vrindavan. And Krishna said, no, no, you can't do this. It's not for you. This is only for the Vrijavasis. You have a different rasa. But they were insisting. No, we want to just show us for 5 minutes some of your leelas. So Krishna did that. And they all became so entranced that they said, we want you to stay like this. Don't go back to being Dwarkadish. Just let us worship you like this. So Krishna said, no, it's not supposed to be like that. But I will give you a deity form. And he became a deity, this same deity. And Rukmini was worshipping this deity in Dwarka until Krishna left the planet and all the queens were taken back to Hastinapur by Arjun and they had to flee and the deity was somehow submerged in the Gopi Talab at Dwarka and that's how he became covered with the chandan. And eventually this merchant found the chandan and they took it to South India and in this way Krishna arranges everything. Do not think that if you blindly follow the orders of the spiritual master, the result will not be there, just because you can't see how. This is the point. This Krishna consciousness movement is going to spread all over the world. All you have to do is play your part, according to the instructions that Srila Prabhupada has given. And it will happen. You don't have to worry about how we're going to... It's overwhelming. But you don't have to worry about it because nimitta matram bhava. The plan is already there. They're already dead, Krishna told Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. So Madhva had this faith. If we have this faith, what will we do for Srila Prabhupada? We will take credit. Even though it's all coming from him, still, he likes to give his devotees credit. So, in this way, Sumadhva Vijaya and other traditional sources, I'm ending now, they describe that on this day, many, many hundreds of years ago, Madhvacharya was preaching from Aitreya Upanishad. Aitreya Upanishad. Not Taitreya Upanishad. Aitreya Upanishad is a different one. And he used to preach in the Ananteshwara Shiva temple. Remember we mentioned there are two temples of Shiva across the street from the Udupi Sri Krishna Mutt. So that's where Madhvacharya used to hold the Bhagavatam class or whatever class he was giving. In this particular occasion, he was speaking from Aitreya Upanishad, and he disappeared at that point. And that place, you can still go there today. It's regarded as a sacred place and worshipped even today. You can see that holy spot where on this day, so many centuries ago, Madhvacharya disappeared. So today being his disappearance, let us bow at his feet, remember him, pray for his blessings, mercy, and really try to represent him by propagating Krishna consciousness as much as we possibly can through the medium of Srila Prabhupada's books. We've been given everything that we could possibly need. Everything is there. Just we have to embrace it ourselves, assimilate the teachings, as we've mentioned, and we have to repeat them to others. And if you can leave them a tangible book, that is even better. So, with this we'll end. All glories to Madhvacharya, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna. Do we have time for questions? Okay, Janardhan Maharaj has. Good question. I was reading just last night in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I mentioned Madhya Lila chapter 9. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's discussion with the Tattvavadis, it doesn't seem as if he really appreciated what that Acharya was representing as Madhvacharya's teachings. But he did appreciate one thing, is that you accept the form of the Lord as eternal and spiritual. This is what we are to accept from Madhvacharya's teachings and what we respect about his teachings. And in fact, what his teachings were meant to establish. Remember, Shankaracharya, who was most prominent, especially in his neighborhood, Sringeri Math is only a few miles away from Udupi. So Shankaracharya was preaching against the form of the Lord. Not maybe explicitly, but implicitly it's very clear. It's not consistent with Mayavad philosophy to have an eternal spiritual form of Krishna, because he doesn't believe in spiritual form, Shankara. So Madhva was really, really focused on establishing this difference, as we've mentioned already. And so this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was pleased with Madhva for. He really did establish that the form of the Lord is eternal. Bhakti is also eternal. This variety is also eternal. We mentioned in the beginning of the class this wonder of Vrindavan. This is all real and eternal and spiritual. If we were left at the mercy of the Mayavadis, which unfortunately is the case for many, many people in this world still, we would never have this appreciation. And if it were not for Madhvacharya, where would Shankaracharya be right now? Probably more potent than he is. Probably more prominent than he already is. So we're all, as they say, we're all resting on the shoulders of giants. So we all owe a debt of gratitude to Madhvacharya and his whole sampradaya, because to this day there's very staunch opponents of Advaitavad. They're not going to give that up. They're going to keep fighting. So this is the one thing that comes to mind from Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila chapter 9. Is that okay? Yeah, Panchakota Prabhu.
In the 87th chapter of the personified pages of praying to the Lord, both in Krishna book and the 10th canto, a lot of the different philosophies are being presented, their logic and philosophical origin, and then they smash all those philosophies. It's a long chapter, but it's in line with what you were speaking about, if you want to understand the depth of the philosophical discussions in the 87th chapter of Krishna book, or the Bhagavad.
Not only Srila Prabhupada, actually, any bona fide spiritual master, he will test his disciples. He will train his disciples. Srila Prabhupada often used to tell the disciple, you take the part of the Mayavadi, I will take the part of the devotee, just to keep them sharp. It's very necessary, because otherwise we just, okay. And what anything anybody says, and yeah, that sounds good. Anything sounds good if you're a fool. anything sounds good if you're not reading Srila Prabhupada's books. So watch out for those people who want to kind of take Prabhupada's books out of the picture. Watch out. Be very careful. This is the only thing that saves us. This is the chief manifestation of Srila Prabhupada's mercy. Books are the basis. Never forget. Shastra Yonitvat. The Vedanta Sutra itself says, everything comes from Shastra. There's no authority outside of Shastra. Okay.
They said books are the basis.
Sorry?
It says books are the basis. Books are the basis, but they say books are the basis.
Money.
Books are the basis, yeah. What to say? This is due to atheism only. Okay, so we have to stop here. It's very late. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.